Before I begin, I think I would like to say that I am going to sit beside the projector on this side. And those brothers who will be immediately behind me may not see much. Would they like to move, or will they, when we come to the slides, find a more comfortable and better place? One tries to be spiritual, but can't be transparent as yet. Brothers, Miss Sahara and brothers, tonight, with slides, we're going on another long journey together. This time, not only in space, but also in time. And the journey in time is of special interest to us because it goes back towards the Atlantean civilization, the fourth root race. Some of the places we shall visit have very strange sounding names. And therefore, I've asked one of the young theosophists who has kindly consented to write some of them on the board. Then when they come to you, here you hear them, they won't sound so odd and incomprehensible. As far as my pronunciation of Mexican goes, and I did practice it with the help of the members, I'll just read those out. Chapultepec. Chapultepec means Hill Tepec of the Grasshopper. Chapultepec. Tenochtitlan, Mexico City. Xochicalco. Cuernavaco. Teopanzolco. Teotihuacan. Interesting that Teo in Old Atlantean and in Mexican means gods. Interesting link with the Middle and Far East. Teopanzolco, Teotihuacan, the place of God or of the gods. Tenayuca, Quilquilco, Quetzalcoatl, worshipped by them in the form of a feathered or plumed serpent. Ichtahuatl, meaning the sleeping white lady. Towering above Mexico City, but in the distance, there is a long snow-covered hill. And as you catch it in outline, it looks like a sleeping white lady. Ichtahuatl. And then you're familiar, not Popocatépetl, as we do in school. I found that was wrong. This is what they told me. Popocatépetl. No, Popocatépetl. Remember, if you're teaching in school, Popocatépetl. Well, those are some of the places we will visit together. Now, just a little recent history of Mexico to give us a setting. Mexico is now a federal republic of 29 states, two territories, and a federal district for its capital, Mexico City, Tenochtitlan. The people are 60% mixed white and Indian, 30% pure-blooded Indians, and 10% pure white. Successive native civilizations were the Toltec, which is the third sub-race of the fourth root race, Zapotec, Mixtec, Olmec, culminating in the warlike Aztec people who conquered and killed the gentler Toltecs as the Hun invaders conquered the ancient Romans. The Aztec gods prescribed that they should settle down when and where they saw an eagle on a cactus plant with a snake in its beak. That was the order of the gods. And this is now, by the emblem of Mexico. It appears on their coins and everywhere. It's an eagle sitting on a cactus leaf with a serpent in its mouth. A very, very occult symbol. This discovery, this was seen, this sign or seal was seen in a swampy area where, like an ancient Venice, the Aztecs established their wonderful capital, Tenochtitlan. Then, in the time of Montezuma II, came Karma, the first white man, the Spanish conquistador Hernan Cortes, who landed on the beach at Veracruz in April 1519. By June 1520, Cortes had conquered the whole Aztec civilization. Pillage based on cupidity and wholesale slaughter were ultimately followed by reconstruction. The temples, palaces, and even homes of Tenochtitlan were demolished. Roman Catholic churches and public buildings were often built of stones from old temples and pyramids. In the later degraded condition of the Aztec people and religion, public human sacrifices were carried out on an enormous scale. Captives chiefly, other victims up to 10,000 a week, and steps leading up to the top of the pyramid temples were always deep dyed red with blood of sacrifices. When the invaders, the Europeans, demolished these buildings, they took some of the very stones and built them into the cathedral on the same site. So the Roman Catholic headquarters in Mexico consists of a great cathedral in the plaza there, some of the stones, blood-stained stones, having been built into it. And many people told me of horrible impressions which they received there in consequence. I repeat then, the temples, palaces, and even homes of Tenochtitlan were demolished. Roman Catholic churches and public buildings were often built of stones from old temples and pyramids. New Spain had come into being, founded upon tyranny and cruelty. A war of independence began in 1810 and succeeded in 1824. September the 15th of that year being the celebrated Independence Day. The revolt of Texas in the 1830s was followed by war with the USA in 1846 and the loss by Mexico of all territory that now includes the US states of New Mexico, Arizona, California, and Texas. In 1861 to 67, sent by one of the Napoleons from France, Archduke Maximilian set up as emperor and lived at Chapultepec, the hill of the grasshopper, and brought Mexico to the very verge of bankruptcy. The two dictatorships which followed were of Benito Juarez and Porfirio Diaz, who were followed by a succession of leaders who brought strife to the unhappy nation. Modern Mexico, however, dates from 1923 with many reforms. I found, as probably you know, Mexico City is a fine modern capital, a new world Paris in the tropics. They have some of the old Spanish ideas there, of course, and the language is Spanish, and the civilization is very Spanish. And so they have with them, of course, the instinct for mañana, which is said by them rather to be a prophecy than an excuse. Mañana, you know, means tomorrow. Whenever there's any project in view, yes, of course, it'd be a splendid thing to do mañana. Later on. And there is some of that spirit there now. And I was most amused when the General Secretary, Senor Adolf La Peña Gil, said to me, the car will call for you tomorrow evening between 7 and 7:30 sharp. I now close this little bit of history. You'll remember the sudden appearance of the volcano El Paricutan, which began as a small volcano but has now grown to a huge active cone and crater 1,500 feet high. A very strange phenomenon. Now, the slides that you will see, particularly first a few in the city of Mexico itself. We begin up on the hill Chapultepec and on the balcony or terrace of the castle in which the Emperor Maximilian and his Empress Carlotta and some of the presidents dwelt. But it's now been made into a national museum of history. Near Chapultepec, there is a fine park and many houses, and which one of the richest residential districts. Some of our members live there. French troops occupied the Mexican capital on June the 7th, 1862, and as I've said, Napoleon III sent this Archduke Maximilian as emperor. In 1867, the French colonists were, however, defeated, and Maximilian was captured and beheaded in 1867. So we begin by views from this hill, looking down one of the great streets, the Paseo de la Reforma, one of the longest streets in America. A long, straight, wonderful street, which you will see. Then many other shots in the streets, monuments, the people, homely shops, some Cortesian buildings still remaining. And then right on up to date, their skyscraper. They're building a skyscraper, it's practically finished, 43 stories high. The tallest building in Latin America. There's no stone, you know, as I said, it was a modern Venice. And there's only a very, very swampy support. And so this great building is placed on floating piers, sunk deep into the clay. And you see at the very top a huge television transmission tower. Then we will see the Palace of Fine Arts and the Opera House together, finished in 1914 and built of heavy marble. White marble at a cost of $15 million. Beautiful white marble from Italy. It's a lovely building. Then there's the cathedral to which I have referred. When Cortes came, the most important structure was the pyramid temple called Teocalli. The conquerors destroyed and used the stone for the cathedral on the same site. This is the headquarters of the Catholic Church in Mexico. Whilst they were doing these excavations, a wonderful discovery was made, somewhat comparable to that of the Rosetta Stone. It was a great circular stone, of which I will show you a slide, called the Aztec calendar. And though it doesn't look very clear to the uninstructed and the layman, the archaeologists have been able to decipher the calendar and chronology of the Aztecs from it. It was discovered whilst they were excavating for the cathedral and just left leaning up against the wall for some time until archaeologists discovered its value, and it's now in the museum there. Then we go out to University City, which is a very big contrast to all this. An entirely modern, almost modernistic University City. Two fine and notable streets in Mexico City lead to University City. Chief of them is the Paseo de la Reforma, which leads right up to the entrance of the university, and then the Avenida Insurgentes, which is the longest in Mexico, over 15 miles in a direct north-south line. It has a center strip as a park and garden, and along it one drives to the University City. It is a new campus which houses the University of Mexico. It has some 80 buildings costing over $50 million. For the visitor, one of the striking features consists of the murals on the walls. They are indeed very striking and were done by the famous Mexican muralist Diego Rivera and another one, Alfari Siguieros. They often cover the entire walls of large buildings, particularly the administration building and the library, which you will see on the slides. The stadium of University City can seat 100,000 persons. So much for relatively modern Mexico. Now, what will we see when we go to the old antique ruins? I think one is struck by three features as one wanders about amongst these ruins and reads what history there is. First, that they have pyramids, which does strongly suggest a direct link or a common heritage with Egypt. Furthermore, their pyramids, I think all of them, are stepped. They're not all rectangular steps. That means they come up in terraces. One of them, of which I'll show you a picture, has its terracing in a spiral around the pyramid, which is more or less circular. But otherwise, their temples and sacred buildings were in the form of stepped pyramids. There is one such, of which I will show you slides as we go on, in ancient Egypt, relic of ancient Egypt, called the Pyramid of Saqqara, the famous step pyramid. So here we get some support, at any rate, for a link between the old and the new worlds and perhaps for the existence of Atlantis. I think the most famous of the antiquities is at Teotihuacan. It was used largely by the Toltecs. There are two main temples, pyramids of the sun and the moon. The sun pyramid is 216 feet high and 750 feet square, with an outer facing it had, which has disappeared. Archaeologists think it was built about 2,000 years ago. They dug into many of their pyramids and into this one, and the tunnel revealed that smaller pyramids were within. And when they wanted to enlarge such works, they didn't demolish them. They merely built a larger one, completely concealing the smaller one. And so it went on, and in most of them there is a succession of such pyramids. Another feature which seems to arrest one is that the religion went through at least two phases, probably three. an original purity when there was a great deal of occultism. As far as I know, there's so much in the symbology and dress and other features which suggest direct occult knowledge. But it passed through an intermediate phase into one of great decadence and, as I've said, blood sacrifices, horrible blood and human sacrifices. And the third feature of interest to us is the common use of the serpent symbol, the symbol of deity and of the deity in man, with distinct suggestions of the chakras here and there as you wander about the ruins. Other features, such as the postures adopted by the figures, strongly indicate a link with the ancient mysteries. In decadence, hundreds of thousands of prisoners were sacrificed at the summit of the Temple of the Sun, thousands of bones having been recovered. The base of this pyramid is larger than any in Egypt. The Temple of the Moon has a purpose which is unknown. A great avenue extended past the steps of the Sun Pyramid to the entrance to the City of the Gods, which is now called the Citadel, where there is a temple of Quetzalcoatl and other temples and subterranean buildings. The temple of Quetzalcoatl, of which you will see slides, is thought to have been built in memory of an ancient emperor of that name, one called Quetzalcoatl, who incurred the wrath of the gods and disappeared into the Gulf of Mexico. But he became deified and worshipped. That, I think, is a mere exoteric glyph. The Aztecs used this temple to worship him. The sculpture is powerful but crude and very dramatic, especially with serpent's heads which represent that Toltec god, Quetzalcoatl, and other sculptures representing other gods, such as Tlaloc, the rain god, and representations of his paradise. The city, now called the Citadel, is a large rectangular court with many minor pyramids on each side and at each corner, and containing an ancient Toltec temple to Quetzalcoatl. This is an enormous citadel which covers 80,000 square yards. The name Teotihuacan means the place of the gods. Its origin is completely unknown. The word Quetzalcoatl means the feathered serpent, worshipped as the god of the air. Then we go to Cuculco, probably the most ancient temple in America. It is circular, without stairways or steps, and is ascended by a winding ramp. Then Tenayuca is also of special interest. A series of Aztec buildings are built round the base of a great pyramid, and all around and on the sides are huge figures of serpents with heads, many of them forming seats. I took many slides there, which I hope you like. Then we go out to the most beautiful city called Cuernavaca, which is a health and pleasure resort where many of the movie stars and rich people have their country homes. There are two pyramids nearby, the pyramid of Teopanzolco and Xochicalco, both of which will be shown on slides. The Aztec calendar to which I referred was discovered in 1790 AD when leveling for the new plaza and the cathedral. As I said, it is now in the museum. I show you one or two snaps of the exhibits in the museum. One is specially struck by a mosaic disc of turquoise and obsidian, thought to have been the Holy of Holies of the temple at Chichen Itza, where it was found. But Theosophists point out that it looks very much like a representation of the root chakra, the Muladhara chakra at the base of the spine. There is a very strange image there called Chakmul. It's a man in a most peculiar posture, lying down with the knees up, bent, feet flat, and the head turned to one side. Its meaning quite unknown, but some of the occultists there suggest that it is a posture for leaving the body by the navel chakra, because there's a big circle there where the navel chakra was. And as you know, the Atlantean race used the astral body and the solar plexus chakra in the way that we Aryans do not use it in white occultism. You will also see a slide of Montezuma's headdress reproduced. It also, made of beautiful feathers, as so many of the headdresses are, distinctly suggests the upflow of the forces of the aura from shoulders and top of the head and the Brahmarandra chakra. Be it so or not, I can't pronounce, but it's very suggestive, and we have from other sources information that the Toltecs and the Aztecs from Atlantis had a profound knowledge of certain forms of occultism. That was to have been all the lecture, and then would have followed the slides, but I understand you would like to hear some of my impressions whilst I was visiting these places. Not my custom very much to talk about these experiences. They're not verified by a senior, and I can't offer them with any assurance of complete accuracy. But when we were at Teotihuacan and were... When we were on the top of one or two of the pyramids, we sat down to rest. It's quite a climb to the top of the Sun Pyramid. And as I sort of rested there and fell into a relaxed mood, I began to see images from the Akashic Records. And this interested me and attracted my attention, and I tried to contact the sources, made a rather special effort. The brothers were all, the members were all seated round me, and they took out their, some two or three of them took out their pens and wrote down what I said. Here it is for what it's worth. The chief difference between this religion of the ancient Mexicans and Christianity consists of direct conscious contact with the forces of the sun, the planets, the zodiac, and the earth, while Christianity uses rather direct superhuman intermediaries. That's the difference. The Mexicans, in their early religion, had direct contact with the forces of the sun, the planets, the zodiac, and the earth, while Christianity uses superhuman intermediaries. There must have been adept leaders behind, I think, but I do not observe any being corresponding, for example, to a personal Christ, to Our Lady, or to the communion of saints. The existence of a branch or center of Atlantean adepts is, however, discernible. Such pyramids as I have visited all seem to be magnetically connected to, consecrated by, and directed from an occult center far to the south. Also, I discern the practice of sending spiritual leaders to visit the various centers, to recharge them and to correct errors which may have arisen. The religions seem to have been divided into two or possibly three divisions. The public worship for the uninstructed and not very intelligent working people. A highly occult heart of the religion of the country, corresponding to the temple of the greater mysteries, and connecting these two grades of neophytes, corresponding to the temple of the lesser mysteries. Through the centuries, a few people moved up these grades. The chief officiant at the temple of the sun, here, which I happened to observe, seemed to be a full adept of the fourth root race. I suddenly became aware that I was watching a ceremonial, and an enormously powerful man was officiating as priest, and he seemed to be at the level of a fourth root race adept. He was a tall man, nearly 6 feet tall, with a reddish brown complexion, very clear-cut features, an accentuated aquiline nose. The head was not pressed in, as was the custom amongst the Aztecs, and the eyes were full of wisdom and power. The face wore an expression of sternness and great strength. He wore beautiful robes, the chief colors of which were red, yellow, green, and purple. There was a high feathered headdress and a kind of robe of woven cloth, and some ornaments on the neck, the legs, and sandals on the feet. He and his helpers evidently know full well of the Kundalini, of the center of the earth and in man. He employed certain ceremonies, postures, poses, and words of power to evoke the earth Kundalini and cause it to flow along the spine of officiants and neophytes being initiated. The major part of the ceremonials concerned the evocation of earth forces in general and Kundalini and the intelligences associated with them. Another part of the ceremonial was concerned with the invocation of the solar Kundalini and other forces from the sun and the higher planes, including the Atma. This force was made to pass rapidly down the head and spine of officiants and candidates to meet the ascending earth forces. These also combined to make a very powerful concentration of solar and terrestrial forces and intelligences in the temple and its surroundings. High in the air, a great circle of golden devas surrounded this temple at a height of several thousand feet, and in a circle with a diameter of at least 1 mile. They kept their auras touching to form a kind of deva chalice. This became filled with the solar wine, in inverted commas, and the forces of Atma, Buddhi, and Manas, which last included the Kundalini. The stem of this great chalice of Devic intelligences, their bodies, and the flowing forces, the stem passed through the summit of the temple down to the level of the ground into which it penetrated, and this made a powerful concentration of forces. A large number of other devas moved about the chalice and above the rim. One very great deva, representing, I think, the solar logos and the lord of the world, he was very tall and all white atmic fire, supervised the proceedings and was in charge of the whole area for some thousands of years. Thus, I think this temple was a very great spiritual center for the whole of this region. There seem to have been three great ceremonies at least, those of sunrise, high noon, which I think was the most important, and sunset. The leaders possessed considerable astronomical and astrological knowledge. They seemed to know about the signs of the zodiac and how to cooperate with the great intelligences and powers of the signs of certain stars and planets. And as I watched them pointing and evoking powers from the distance, I noticed particularly that from Venus and Mars. I think the color of the robes and the paintings of the temples were designed to be in mutual resonance or harmonious vibration with these superphysical planetary and astral forces and intelligences. Planetary and stellar forces and intelligences. The various main steps of this sun pyramid, the number of stairs, and the width of the stairways were, I think, symbolic of the planes of nature, of levels of human consciousness, and degrees existing in those days. There are seven of such terraces, as you'll see. Neophytes and initiates took their places on these steps, which corresponding with the degrees they had attained. Thus, a measure of tiling in the Masonic sense was achieved. The general public remained upon the ground level, aware that magic, as they thought of it, was being performed at the higher levels. At certain signals, thousands of people shouted together certain monosyllables, which were words of power which they had been taught. Some of them seemed to end in hard consonants, like ok, an oct, an ottle. And I listened, I was able to hear a little, however dimly, from the Akashic records, this tremendous chanting led by the priest Solo, and then all the people, thousands of them, replying. And thus there was set up a tremendous mantric force which attracted and drew them into communion with high devas to whom I have referred. These ceremonies, which seem to have been kept up for centuries without interruption, established a tremendous center of power which was distributed throughout the neighborhood. The Sun Temple was the most occult of all the surrounding temples and used for the higher ceremonies, public and private. The high priests were the real rulers of the country, guided and directed the temporal chieftains, most of which were initiates of various degrees. Same principle as in ancient Egypt, we are taught. The moment of high noon was measured by a vertical staff above the topmost temple, now demolished, and gave the time at which the powerful invocations were uttered and power and blessings were sent out over the huge population of the city and the countryside. The next little piece I give has actually been verified, though I didn't know it. Now these temples stand in rather arid and deserted countryside. But as I was watching all this, I said, this region was once densely populated, and the civilization had a definite spiritual and occult heart. The temples, of course. Some of the initiates seem to have had psychic powers, particularly enabling them to see the auras of the leaders, which were very brilliant and large. And it was this great experience which maintained order throughout the land. There was also a succession of kings who were associated with the temple life, but concerned themselves with civil, temporal life of the people. They also, the kings, were magnetically powerful men, highly developed egos, sent into incarnation for the purpose of leadership. The people, however, the common people, were very superstitious and animistic in their outlook, and they were left with their limitations and delusions. These rather served as a shield to the occult life of the community. The astrologers seem to have known as much, if not more, than the astrologers of today. particularly as far as the forces and the intelligences of the zodiac and the planets and the sun are concerned. Although they had no telescopes, the initiated were trained to see and to detect combinations of planetary forces when the aspects began to play. They could feel them, they could sense them, knowing, for example, that Mars was strong at certain times. So also the other planets and signs, and other planetary aspects like conjunctions, squares, oppositions, which either strengthened or weakened planetary forces. Their physical, mental, and astral bodies became sensitized to such a degree into sensitized astronomical machines or instruments. And they were trained so they could know, they could feel when the planetary and zodiacal aspects were on and their strength and their nature. They knew then subjectively what the modern astrologer knows from the ephemeris. And I believe part of the training of initiation was thus to be sensitized. Repeating, their physical, astral, and mental bodies became sensitized to such a degree that they became like human observatories, as it were, so that they would know occultly what was happening in the heavens. Aided by physical recognition of the positions of some of the planets and sensing the various influences. I do not discern any casting of horoscopes as we know it with their interpretation of temporal affairs. Possibly the high initiates may have known this, but it was not common knowledge as it is today. At the special times of important ceremonies, performed when the sun was at its meridian, and others I have referred to, the whole summit of the pyramid seemed to be on fire, as if from some astro-mental flames, reaching out for 100 yards or more on every side. This seems to me to represent sun forces. Sun worship at its greatest and purest, the real original sun worship, when the leaders and many of the people really were in touch with the tremendous powers coming from sun, the solar logos, and the great intelligences associated with them. Real occult sun worship. Nearly all religious practice is, in a measure, sun worship. But now, of course, that original clear vision has been largely lost. The secular life of the people blended intimately into the religious life, there being no real division between them, as is partly a tendency in some forms of Christianity. Nearly everything in the daily life of these people of thousands of years ago was given a religious meaning. All this seems to refer to the civilization and religion at their height, and it was these impressions in the Akash which first affected my consciousness and attracted my attention. Doubtless there were cycles of decline in which superstition displaced occultism and spirituality to a large extent, but it would seem that for many thousands of years this particular region seems to have been the center of a high civilization of the fourth root race. I think this state of affairs lasted till about 500 AD, after which it began to decline. And very tentatively I suggest that it existed at least 1,000 years before that and probably many thousand years into the remote past of Atlantean days. There, my brothers, are a few of the impressions which I received on the summit of the great temple of the sun at Teotihuacan.